Welcome to the Fight White Genocide podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number one, recorded December 13th, 2017, and we have a special guest, Lord Nelson, joining us. Today's topic is the basics of power and politics. No matter what you're trying to do, you have to get the basics right first. If you're going to build a bridge, you have to get the basics of physics right and how materials work. Maybe take environmental concerns into account. If you don't get the basics right, your bridge is going to fall. If you're trying to fight a war, you got to get the basics right of staying in formation, firing your weapon, engaging in possibly some subterfuge. You got to get the basics right. If you don't get the basics right, you're not gonna be effective. So what are we trying to do here? If we look at the situation we're in, where white countries are being flooded with non-whites and forced assimilated, how did we get here and what are we going to do about it? Well, if we're talking about doing something politically, you have to take power. You have to take political power. So how do you do that? How do you do that in this age of mass media? Well, how did the anti-whites take power? Did they march an army in and stick a boot on everyone's neck? No, they came up with a consistent message. They came up with terminology and talking points and narratives that put them in power. They did take over all these institutions, but that's not all they did. They used them to propagate their consistent message. It's my contention that propaganda works, and the only effective response to a talking point is another talking point. You gain power by repeating your talking points over and over.
For sure.
But if we actually step back, okay, if you want to do anything, you have to be in power. You have to take power. The ability to get things done and power are one and the same thing. So instead of spending a lot of time describing the way things are, complaining about them, or talking about what you're going to do after in power, maybe you should spend some more of your time actually getting in power. Since you can't do anything until you're in power. So how about let's spend most of our efforts doing what it takes to get in power. And that means discrediting our enemies and legitimizing ourselves. That means imposing our talking points and our narratives and our terminology and discrediting our enemies' talking points, terminology, and narratives. Okay, so some people might say, well, should we run candidates? And I would say, well, it's not a high priority because in office is not in power. When we're in power, only pro-whites will be able to be elected. And they'll only be able to do pro-white things. If we're not in power, then getting somebody elected doesn't matter because they're not going to be able to do anything we want them to do. They're not going to be able to change the laws. They're not going to be able to enforce the laws.
I agree with all that. And basically, the way the anti-whites got into power is by repetition, repeating their talking points, repeating their slurs against whites and things like that. And that's basically what we have to do and what we're doing. And it's working. You're seeing the word anti-white on mass media. It's everywhere now. Every time I turn on Fox News, I'm going to hear it within an hour. Somebody's going to be accused of being an anti-white or quote-unquote anti-white racism. So what we're doing is working. Our phrases are getting out there, and now it's becoming part of the lexicon, white genocide, anti-white. These are now just words that are being thrown around like any other word. So that's basically our objective, and I think we've been extremely successful with that over the years. And again, I'm really excited about what's going to take place in the years to come, because I think it's only going to work more and more in our favor.
Yeah, it's becoming, like you're saying, it's making this terminology becoming part of the discourse. And when Jeff is talking about power, you know, it's not in power or politicians, you know, positions and things like that. It's the discourse, the public opinion and controlling that public opinion. Although, Jeff, you did say about, you know, that we're not going for positions, office, you know, positions, but it is still a good thing to do to get that freedom of speech. You know, citizens have the right to broadcast what they want. And Bob always said about being that perpetual candidate, just to get that little bit of what a real American used to have, freedom back.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Running for office is always a good option. You get media outlets and opportunities that you normally don't get as a regular civilian when you're running for office. We were talking about that yesterday in private, about the robocalls. You're allowed to do robocalls and things like that to unlisted numbers when you are running as a candidate. And also you get discounts on radio and TV and things like that. So definitely a good reason to run. But again, there's a big difference, like Jeff was saying, a huge difference between being in office and being in power. And I think Donald Trump's presidency has kind of reiterated that point to an extent. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to run for office, then don't expect to get in power by getting in office, but use it as a platform to put out your own talking points and narratives. And nobody is more circumscribed in their behavior and their speech than a politician. Nobody's under more scrutiny. Nobody gets attacked more viciously if they step out of line a little bit than a politician. In office is not in power. Power goes to the group that controls public opinion. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think the election with Roy Moore pretty much solidifies that point too, about public opinion and being in power.
Bob used to mention the story about Huey Long, and he was asked what the secret of his success, and he said, "I figure out where people are going, and then I get in front of it."
Get out in front, yep.
So, okay, that doesn't sound like somebody in power to me. That somebody sounds like somebody that just has a good antenna, can see where people are going. So what is power then? What makes people go a certain way? That's what power really is.
Yep.
So and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make people go a certain way. We're trying to, you know, we talk about change public opinion or change mass consciousness. But that's where real power lies.
The power to shape public opinion.
Right. You can't do anything until you're in power. And power means controlling public opinion. So that's kind of where it starts. And that's where everything else flows from. That pretty much answers all your questions, you know. Should we run people? Should we do IR in real life or internet stuff? Should we stage public rallies? You know, well, whatever you do, have a consistent message. Have effective talking points. That's the most important thing. What's important is what you say when a reporter puts a microphone in your mouth. What are the actual words that come out of your mouth? Not whether you're
to get in power.
What kind of armbands you have, or what kind of uniform you have, or what you're wearing.
Yeah. Right, is what you say.
Yep.
And to get in power and to get that public opinion is to use a consistent message, and that is what we do, and that's what works. And we've seen our effectiveness, and we've seen how we have implanted these words like anti-white and white genocide into the discourse, and we've seen the conversation, you know, generate in response to that. So, and we're modeling it off of the Soviet Union and the success that the Samizdat had in bringing down the Soviet Union.
But what we're doing is a little more crucial, because we're trying to save a race rather than bring down a simple system, a political or an economic system. We're trying to maintain our race. It's a bit different than Samizdat, but in my opinion, it's far more crucial.
Well, we're still breaking propaganda though as well, and that's, they had to do that, and we still have the fear of the gulag. You know, we step out of line and we do something wrong, or you know, people look at how many people from Charlottesville and you know, that have gone to jail, or you know, looking at going to jail because of things that they've done. So, you know, it's you certainly have that threat.
The Soviet example, I mean, if we go back to 1917, how did the Bolsheviks get in power? They said, land, bread, peace, land, bread, peace, land, bread, peace. over and over. Yeah, so what about the Germans? What about you know, what about paying our debts? What about this and that? No, land, bread, peace. Land, bread, peace. That's how they took power. So how did they get out of power? Well, that's where Samizdat came in. They said, well, why does a worker's paradise have to shoot escapees? Yeah, and they said that over and over. And eventually nobody trusted or believed or liked the Soviet system.
That's right. And so that's exactly what we're doing, right, with our memes. You know, we're pointing out that Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, but white countries for everybody. You know, we're exposing the anti-white system, which is controlling all white countries, with simple talking points. And these are the talking points. Like, as you said, you know, when you get in front of the media, these are the talking points that need to be repeated and exposed.
Yeah, it's also important to remember to make everything you say quotable, something that they will that can be printed in the New York Times, especially when you're talking to the media. It's all a lot to do with optics. Of course, pro-whites are in a situation where optics really aren't a huge deal because we've been slandered and demonized by Hollywood media forever. So it's not a bad place to start from, actually, where your optics can't get any worse.
I was going to just say that I agree with everything that's just been said, but it's just one little key piece of the jigsaw that I think we can add to that, and that is timing. And the reason that Samizdat was so effective is the time was right, because they were having to build walls to stop their own people from escaping the Marxist paradise because of different things. And I do feel the timing is right for our message now, even more so than it was when we first started saying things like anti-white and white genocide and coming on with these kind of memes. I think people are more ready for our message now than they ever were.
Yeah,
facts on the ground, I don't think alone deprogram anybody, but they do support our message. They prove that we're right.
For sure. And I think the fact that, whatever you think of Donald Trump, is what I take from the Donald Trump thing is their entire establishment right across the Western world, through everything they had, is stopping that guy from getting elected. And, I mean, for all I know, he could be the biggest anti-white in the whole world, for all I know. I don't have a very strong opinion about the guy, but I find it fascinating that... The whole establishment media, the whole deep state or whatever you want to call it, they pulled out all the stops, did everything they could, including other world leaders, politicians in other countries. It was all coordinated, and yet he got elected. And that tells me that the time is coming for things to happen, eventually, finally. I don't know what anyone else thinks of that.
Well, we've had the internet now since about 1995, so... a little over 20 years, so we've had, you know, an alternative message has been put out there. So we're starting to get people out of their demoralized state, and so that's the effect of it. Their brainwashing isn't working as much anymore.
That's right, and I think you know that. Yeah, exactly. They're sick of political correctness, and some of the stuff that he spoke about, you know, really spoke to a great majority of the country, you know, even just conservatives and, you know, people who are seeing and affected, you know, by diversity and seeing, you know, the country changing. I mean, seriously, the southern states are really changing. Are, you know, the signs and how everyone's, you know, speaking Spanish, and, you know, it's really changing. So when you're getting affected by that, and people start to say, hey, look, I agree with that, you know, we need to have, you know, a border wall and that. And so everything he was saying is starting, you know, people are turning to agree with that. And, you know, speaking out about it, political correctness and fake news, it's all very much the right time. Like you've just said, Nelson, it's the right time. The timing is perfect.
Yeah, I think for decades the media has kind of been shaping public opinion. And I think the politicians have been terrified of the media and not the other way around. But it's like finally with the internet, it's been around a few years now, and also maybe other things. I think there has to be, no matter what it is, whether it's communism in the Soviet Union or whatever it may be, everything has a natural life cycle. And that life cycle does not go on forever, regardless of what other people do. Of course, the danger is that it has to be put right before things go too far in the wrong direction. So we don't have all the time in the world. I think within time it'd come to an end anyway by itself. But we need to make it come to an end as soon as possible. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the sooner we can take power, yeah, the sooner we can start fixing things and the less damage is going to be done, yeah. And, well, yeah, that's right. Everything that the pro-whites said all along has come true. Everything the anti-whites said has been shown to be a lie. It's not about fairness. It's not about equality. It's just about hating white people and getting rid of them, and that's obvious now, yeah.
Yeah, to me, a big watershed was when the so-called refugee crisis happened. I mean, it only confirmed what we'd been saying for years earlier. But it was so obvious, the agenda involved. And go on.
In 1965, you might have been able to believe Ted Kennedy when he said this 1965 Immigration Act is not going to change the demographics of America. But you can no longer believe him. You know?
No.
Everything the pro-whites said would happen has happened. You know, and everything the anti-whites said would happen has not happened. Or they're shown to be the liars and the frauds and the cons that they are.
I'm old enough to remember that a time when if you talked about, certainly in Europe, if you talked about white people becoming a minority in Britain, the average British person would have just told you that you were crazy. But now, the response to that is, well, what's wrong with that? It's just progress. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I've witnessed that change in my lifetime.
At one time it was a white supremacist neo-Nazi conspiracy theory that they're going to turn Europe and America non-white. And now, today, well, of course they're doing it. And if you object, you're a neo-Nazi white supremacist.
What's progressive about turning into a brown third world?
Putting an end to white supremacy and racism.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. You know, not to be racist.
Haiti is ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Progressive.
That's white genocide right there.
I think because we've been living with the same message for so long, we kind of get a bit blasé about it, but I do feel that it's more important now than ever and that the timing is more right for our message and the basic principles of anti-white and white genocide. And I know there's more to it than that. But pretty much what Jeff was talking about, I know it had some effect, but I believe it's now going to have an even greater effect. Don't any have any other opinions on that, Philip?
Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's just too obvious to deny. Like you were pointing out back in the day, you didn't really feel the effects, but now everybody in every aspect of their life is seeing this, and it's impossible to deny.
Yeah.
Even like in my job, I was speaking with a couple, and they're just a nice middle-class white couple and not the sort of couple that you'd expect. You know, they were very sort of university-educated, very kind of prim and proper. And we were talking about their commercials on the television, and I sort of chanced my neck a little bit, and I just started subtly saying, have you noticed like 90% of the couples on the TV commercials are mixed-race couples? It's always a white woman with a black man. And being diplomatic, I said, well, I wouldn't mind if it was like the odd commercial, because why not? But when it's like the vast majority, it makes you think that there is an agenda here. And they looked at me and they looked at each other and they said, yes, we know what you mean. We've been talking about that ourselves. So this was like a normal white couple, very, very respectable, sort of middle class, etc. And they didn't themselves had noticed sitting at home watching the commercials on their television that virtually every couple was a mixed race couple. So I found that quite interesting because they were not the kind of people that you'd expect. And that was kind of a sort of chance in my arm and I brought it into the conversation. I was very, very diplomatic when I did it as well because I didn't know what reaction I was going to get. But I was very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it really is the time. You know, the time is right. People are starting to see it. It's just becoming so blatant. And I think, you know, that's why what we do works and why we're seeing so much success. And I think, you know, that's what we're talking about today is the basics and staying on message, you know, having a consistent message works. And You know, it's really something so cool. You know, what Bugs has produced, you know, memes that are responses to the Antiwhites, because the Antiwhites have the same attacks every time. You know, like it's so planned out what they're going to say, and it's so easy to have a response, a set response to respond to them. So, you know, the Bugses have produced that Bugs Buddy, and I think, you know, it's something we need to do. We have up on FWG. That we need to put up on FWG and get out there. And I know that we have a lot of the talking points that Jeff has put up on FWG responding to anti-whites. And
We've got them down to a science. I mean, It's to the point now where, you know, you talk to them and you know what they're going to say before they do. You know they're brainwashing better than they do.
Yeah,
you could have a better conversation with yourself than you could have with them, like, because you already know the brainwashing, you know the repetition that they've been spoon-fed their entire life. So it becomes easy. That's another good thing about why we're effective, is because we know what they're going to say. We know how they're going to respond, and we know the response to that.
Exactly. And I mean, between us, you know, here, we've been Bugses for many, many years now. But for new people that are coming on board and they're, you know, that they're interested in actually winning against an anti-white and having a response, it's something people should, reference each day if they're looking for a response, you know, on how they get attacked online or somebody calls them something, or, you know, any of the questions that we have answers to the anti-white attacks. It's a great point of reference for new people to get those responses to fight the anti-whites with.
I have a question for Jeff. You know that the recent poster campaign that the alt-right did, it's okay to be white. And I do see that there's a bit sort of milk toast, but then I'd also see that's what made it so effective. It was very well balanced, very well charged. But do you see that as something that we should be doing with our own memes, just putting out little flyby posters and key locations, stuff like that? Do you see that in our future?
Yeah, anything that gets our message out and gets in front of people, and anything that gets media attention especially, is what needs to be done.
Yeah.
That it's okay to be white. Yeah, it is. It's weak, but what really made it so effective was the anti-white's response to it. It was so over the top, so vicious, and so insane. You know, they said, "No, it's not okay to be white." So it put them in a bad position. We're always trying to discredit the anti-whites. They're always trying to discredit you, and our job is to discredit them. And they're attacking such a benign statement, discredited them. They were put in a position where they either had to admit that, yeah, it's okay to be white, or make themselves look bad. Either way, they look bad. However they answer that question, they look bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same with our billboard campaign that was white self-hatred is sick. Exact same thing. Same kind of response. Yeah. And same kind of message.
We could do loads of variations while being consistent, of course, like, can you say no to white genocide? ? You know, white genocide is wrong. Pretty simple. Just getting it out there. I do feel that, of course, the anti-white thing worked right from the get-go. The white genocide thing was harder to push. But I feel now the time is right more than ever for people to be susceptible to that message, because it is true, of course, and it's getting more and more obvious. And it would be really cool to do something like that, to have, like, go to some university, you know, everyone goes in the next morning and there's all those little sort of little memes stuck to the walls. The student is freaking out.
And we can see that it works. You know?
For sure.
It's very simple. It's very cheap. And it works. I think there is a broad consensus now that we are in a meme war or a propaganda war. But there still isn't a lot of recognition of what is an effective meme versus an ineffective meme. A lot of people think, a lot of pro-whites seem to still think that putting up a green frog is an effective meme, but it's not. That's just preaching to the choir. It doesn't discredit any whites. It doesn't legitimize us. It's just sort of a bandwagon effect.
So you have
on your side and you're on my side, but that doesn't deprogram white people. So we have to combine the two. Yes, it's a propaganda war, but you have to use effective propaganda. When I say effective propaganda, is something that discredits anti-whites or legitimizes us or deprograms brainwashed white people.
Yeah, I can see that. I think what the alt-right have done very well is they've created a kind of like a hip movement. They know that it's, they become kind of trendy and risque. So it's sort of very, very fashionable how they're going about things. And I think we could learn little bits and pieces from them, but making sure that we stick to our message, of course.
And our enemies, they maintain power and largely just by calling people names, like racist, supremacist, bigot. So if you don't have an effective response to that, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to... If all the anti-whites have to do is call you racist and win the argument, obviously that's what they're going to do, and they're going to win, and then you're done. So first thing you have to do is have an effective response to the accusation of being a racist or racism. And our responses are basically, well, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. Or you can say, well, racist is just an anti-white hate slur. That's just like, you know, calling a Jew a kike or a Mexican a wetback, you know. Or you could say, well, you're calling me a heretic. I am not of your faith. So it doesn't mean anything to me.
I remember one time, one of the videos from, was it Charlottesville, the big rally? And there were all these like pro-whites, and they kept referring to the anti-whites as liberals. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, these guys are calling you Nazis, white supremacists, haters, etc., etc. And all you can do in return is call them what they want to call themselves.
Exactly. And I agree with that, like people that use Antifa all the time. Why are you calling them Antifa or anti-fascist? They're anti-white. You know, label them properly. They're not. They're still going to call you a Nazi. They're going to call you a white supremacist. Why are you affirming their label in their narrative? Doesn't make any sense to me.
It's one thing about the pro-white side that I find so frustrating. Even going back to the early days on Stormfront, when it was all kind of just like constant name calling, and our side would always be trying to justify all the time, and it's just like, you know, go on the attack.
Yeah, and I think that's what separates us from other groups, is that we are going on the attack. We're putting them on the defensive. Nobody else is doing that. I don't see anybody else doing that. And I'm slowly starting to see mainstream media like Fox News and Breitbart using our terminology and occasionally putting them on the defensive by accusing people of being anti-white. But normally somebody accuses like Sean Hannity of being a racist, and he'll do a half-hour show about how he's not a racist, proving he's not a racist and that kind of thing. It's getting better. It's moving along slowly but surely, and of course I wish it would move along faster.
Yeah, it's all about taking the moral high ground. If you look at that in a very broad sense, offense is always more effective in a propaganda war because it makes you look like the person in charge. It makes you look like the person who's being proactive and getting something done. You always want to make yourself look like the one that's more knowledgeable.
The adult in the situation.
The adult, the smarter one, the more clever one, the funnier one. That's what I mean by taking the moral high ground.
Yeah, you're taking control of the whole conversation. That's what we do. We can take a conversation on race, and we will have total control of that conversation within a short amount of time. Other groups don't do that.
Right, and you have to understand that it's a war of words, but we mean that literally. We don't mean it's a war of ideas expressed in words. It means they throw a racist at you, you lob an anti-white at them. It is literally a war of words. You are imposing your terminology, as Horace Evinger has said. You impose a terminology, you impose ideology. That's how you take power.
And it's undeniable. You know, you can't deny what's happening, and that's why we have so much more weight behind what we're doing, is because it's simple truths. their simple truths when you state, you know, Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, but white countries for everybody. You know, that's why it is. It has so much effectiveness. It is so effective. And just to keep repeating that, and it's power.
Right. And it's important to know. I mean, like the anti-whites got everybody to say diversity is a strength by mere repetition. Mm. Totally absurd statement that diversity is a strength. By no unit, no gauge of measurement is it a strength, but if just mere repetition convinced people. So we've got, now we can use that repetition and inject truth, reality into the, that's the major difference of what we're doing than what, and a huge advantage that we have over the anti-whites is that what we're saying is totally true and undeniable, irrefutable. Yeah. You can debate it if you want, you're going to lose, but we've got that, the truth. And as long as we start repeating it, that's why it's important to get other people involved in this, get more people using the terminology, more people using the accusation of white genocide.
I agree, we need as many people as possible. And I'm not saying this to be downheartening, but just to give ourselves a bit of a pat on the back, when the anti-whites pushed these memes, they did it through the whole power of the entire mainstream media. So, you know, it's disheartening in a sense, but I think we should give ourselves some credit what we've been up against the last few decades. That's all I'm trying to say, because right. Sometimes it sounds like the anti-whites are so clever and they got all these memes figured out and they got all this and all that. They got the entire establishment behind them.
Yeah, they've got a $10 trillion brainwashing campaign. We are pure grassroots as it gets.
For not, sure.
Not AstroTurf, nothing like that. This is as grassroots as it gets. This is the most revolutionary movement I've ever seen in my lifetime, and probably ever will see.
I just had an image come in my head there when you were talking about the It's Okay to Be White meme and how it got mentioned by Tucker Carlson. I think Tucker Carlson would have a heart attack if he was going to appear on his show on TV and read off one of our memes. All white countries and only white countries. It's genocide.
Yeah.
I can't
but
imagine.
He has done white genocide. Tucker said has talked about white genocide with the professor.
Yeah. Yes, he has. He's mentioned the phrase a few times. I remember when I first got started with all this back in like 2011 or 2012, I got a hold of Tucker Carlson's cell phone number, and I sent him a text message with diversity as a code word for white genocide.
Did you get a response?
No.
No way.
That's so funny.
Yeah, there's been some, you know, there's lots of people, and I think that's what Bob said. It was the start of the campaign for us was when Hillary Clinton said white genocide. Well, you know, just that everything, I think he said it's all coming from us. You know, the movement is from us and what we're doing, the work that we're doing. And that's, I think, our main goal is to get these people to mention white genocide and to have a discussion. You know, ultimately, we want a discussion on white genocide.
When did Hillary Clinton ever mention white genocide? I can't even imagine that.
Oh, in her biggest campaign speech.
Deplorable. It was her deplorable speech.
Yeah, deplorable. She mentioned the basket of deplorables and then mentioned white genocide.
In what context did she mention white genocide? Was she warning against it, or was she saying it wasn't true? Or?
No, she was. It was in a derogatory manner that she essentially Donald Trump tweeted an account that had the name white genocide TM, and she mentioned right. that, and she was using it as like an attack on Trump. That he's aligned himself with people who believe white genocide. That was just the basis of her point, and yeah, that's horrible that anybody would object to genocide.
You mean people that understand Article 2C of the Geneva Convention, 1948,
right?
Imposing conditions upon an ethnic group designed to bring about their demise, either in whole or in part.
Right. I mean, Joe Biden believes in it. I mean, he bragged about it. He bragged about America and Europe being turned non-white and said it's a great thing. There's a speech on him saying that. I mean, he believes in it. Why is he allowed to believe in it, but we're not? Oh, that's right, because we object.
So there's nothing wrong with it as long as you agree with it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing I always hear from anti-whites is that, oh, I don't hate all white people. Well, of course not. You just hate the ones that object to the genocide you demand upon white people. I think you made that clear. I always make that clear. I don't hate all white people. Of course not.
Just for the benefit of any newbies listening, the 1948 Geneva Convention, there's a couple of bits in there. Denying an ethnic group their own living space and bringing conditions upon the group calculated to bring about their demise, either in whole or in part. I'm doing it off the top of my head. I haven't Googled it. You can Google it and find the exact quote. But it's right there. And if it wasn't there, it wouldn't change the reality. This is very simple. It's everything been implemented in the last few decades only amounts to one thing, and that is the end of a particular ethnic group. Simple as.
Any attempt to get rid of a group by any means is the way I put it.
Right.
That's a simple definition for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's it in a nutshell. Deliberately eradicating a race by any method.
Exactly.
That's the way I don't know a better way to put it.
In whole or in part, yep.
Yeah, in whole or in part, attempted or, you know, whether you attempted it or were successful, it's still genocide.
And I wonder, as you mentioned, yep. You know, we can tell the truth. Yeah, we're pro-white, and we freely admit it. They're anti-white and won't admit it. They always have to dance around and lie. The basic of anti-whiteism is they bounce back between two contradictory ideas. One, there's no such thing as race, or race doesn't matter, or race is a social construct. And then the other one is whites are uniquely evil. They're constantly bouncing back between these two positions. And now the two positions are contradictory. But they use whichever one they have to at a particular time to try to discredit you. The best way to deal with that, I think, is don't try to prove they're wrong. Don't try to prove that race exists or that whites exists or that whites are not uniquely evil. Just put those two next to each other. Just say, okay, 5 minutes ago you said, you're asking what a white person is? Five minutes ago you were talking about white privilege. So obviously you know who white people are. Here I see you mentioned Black Lives Matter, so obviously you know who black people are. So you're trying to discredit them by saying, well, you're being dishonest. You're running a scam. You're running a con. You're saying one minute whites are evil. The next minute there's no such thing as race.
Yeah.
That's the best way to discredit them, I think, is to use their words, their contradiction. Don't try to argue about even any facts, really. Just use their own words, the stuff that they said, that they wrote down, that they typed in a comment or a tweet.
Yeah, I do that all the time on Twitter. Like, if they're saying, oh, well, what's a white person? I'll just go through their Twitter feed and find them accusing white people of something or blaming white people for history. And I'll say, well, these are the white people I'm talking about.
I got,
you know,
I got
who
one
white
for
people
you.
Are when you want to blame them.
I find an easy answer as well to that. If you, what is a white person? Oh, so you're an anti-white who's denying the existence of white people.
Yeah.
What a surprise.
That's their intent, is basically to dehumanize whites and say, well, white people don't exist, therefore it's okay to get rid of them. It's essentially, I mean, something Horace used to say, you know, Saddam Hussein went up on tribunal, on his genocide tribunal, and said, Kurds are a social construct. Do you think he would have got off? Of course not.
This is where you have them cold, though, because they have to run this contradiction to make this anti-white system work. And the other place you have them cold is the fact that they are turning white countries non-white. And it's done through deliberate policy. And if anybody objects, you know, they get slandered, they get fired, or in Europe they even get thrown in jail. So this is the other place where I have them cold. You don't have to argue about anything else. You know, you don't have to argue about DNA or about crime rates.
Yep.
Best to avoid all that.
That they're contradicting themselves and that they're turning white countries non-white, and they openly brag about it.
I want to give you an example of something so beautiful where you can overcomplicate things and how the simple answer is the best. I was once debating anti-white on a YouTube video, and he thought he was so smart, and he said to me, define a white country to me. And I just replied, so you're an anti-white who denies the existence of white countries. What else is new? question mark. And he disappeared because he was expecting me to try and get myself tied in knots, trying to define what a white country is or what a white person is. And I just get bashing them over the head in the most simplest way. Well, you know,
you get sued for not letting in refugees.
Right. A white country is any country that's called racist or white supremacist if they refuse to drown themselves with diversity.
I mean, right, but there's a little difference. I was attacking him personally. So, you know, if an anti-white says to me, define white. So you're an anti-white who denies the existence of white people. What a surprise. Yeah. So I'm not attacking the logic. I'm attacking him as a person. And
Actually doing both, in my opinion, but yeah.
Okay. But I'm actually personalizing it. I'm saying you are an anti-white who just happens to deny the existence of white people. What a surprise. So yeah, I'm attacking the logic, but I'm making it personal. I don't know. It's little things I find very, very successful.
The point that Adelheim brought up in a podcast a long time ago is that anti-whites might seem like that they're contradicting themselves from one conversation to the next, but actually they are pretty consistent in what they're doing, because no matter what they are saying, they are pushing for a world without whites. Everything that they're saying
always amounts to the same thing.
Yeah. It always leads to the same thing, white genocide.
Yeah. Me and Adelheim were talking about this years ago, that it seems contradictory. But then when you actually stand back and look at it from the point of view of pushing white genocide, it's entirely consistent.
Right. They take whatever position they have to at that particular moment to push genocide. That's where they are consistent.
Yeah. Yep. It's kind of amazing. And it was a brilliant point by Adelheim that I'd never considered until he pointed that out. It's exactly it.
They'll change their view
from one conversation to the next. Whatever fits the anti-white proposition. Well, I'm sorry.
Can I just say, that was my point. It wasn't Adelheim.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm taking credit. Everything anti-whites say must always amount to the same thing: white genocide.
Yeah. And that's it. I think the anti-whites, you know, that's why we said it before, that they say the same things over and over, and they have the same responses as Jeff just said. Then they keep changing their, you know, that's what you guys were talking about, that the anti-whites keep changing their, their statements and their attacks, whatever to fit their, whatever at the moment. So, and that's where the Bugs Bunny comes in so handy, is because it has every response for every single, you know, common attack from the anti-whites. And it's just so easy to copy and paste.
Yeah, you have to remember, like, what they say in every conversation. If they acknowledge white people exist by blaming them for history, take note of that, because maybe in 2 minutes they're going to say there's no such thing as white people. You don't know. Yeah. All you know is that they're going to be anti-white. That's the only thing that's assured.
Yeah, I remember Adelheim had a debate with a French anti-white, and the French anti-white did the classic one we've just been speaking about, saying he didn't know what a white person was. And Adelheim responded with, therefore you don't recognize that white privilege exists then, if you don't know what a white person is. And the anti-white backed off. But then he had the audacity 20 minutes later to try and make the exact same point over again. But Adelheim gave him the same response. So he tried it in the beginning of the debate. Adelheim hit him with that. And then he tried to do the same thing again later on. And Adelheim just, you know, give the same... You try the same thing, you get the same response. Yeah. And he was very, very good in that debate. And just keeping it all simple. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
I actually was part of that. I was like the moderator, if you will. And it wasn't just like an average French anti-white. This was the guy who was like the head of Europe's largest anti-racist organization.
Right. I remember Pierre or something. I forget
who it was. But,
I remember that.
I just remember his arrogance. Well, I don't really understand what is a white person. Mm. So you're now denying white privilege exists? That's something to that effect.
Yeah. Right, you're denying white supremacy. Like, how can somebody be a supremacist to something that doesn't exist? Unicorn supremacy.
Well, I think it shows what Nelson's just explained there from Adelheim's debate with that guy, is that it shows how to flip it around on them, you know, to be quick on your toes with anti-whites and to saying, well, you know, that is the best response to an anti-white who says, I don't know what a white person is. Well, I mean, that's hilarious response. Well, then you obviously don't agree with white privilege or whatever, you know, what were the exact words, but you know, that's a brilliant response. It discredits them, as Jeff was saying, you know, that's what we're looking for.
And it also proves that no matter how high of a level the anti-white is, whether they are a PhD or a 7-year-old, their arguments are always the same. Always.
Yeah.
And also having the presence of mind to have the trust in your responses. So when the anti-white try to do it again, and remember, it's got all the power of the corporate mainstream media, the $10 trillion programming, if you like, behind him. And Adelheim had the presence of mind when he tried it a second time to hit him with the exact same response a second time. So he didn't try it a third time.
Well, I think that's a great reminder right there too, Nelson, is that we need to stay on point. You know, when these things happen, and you know, you need to stay on message, not try to get tricky and intellectual and try to outsmart them with your wits and knowledge and so forth. That's why the memes and messages are so effective, consistent messages, to stay on point. And it probably had so much more effect, the fact that he just repeated, Adelheim just repeated the exact same thing. The guy was flawed, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, when you try to get all smart and clever and statistical, that's when you start leading off into some other conversation, into tailgating.
Tailgating, as we call it. That's right.
This is where the respectable conservatives come in, because when you try to do that, respectable conservatives will come in and cut you off at the knees and say, you know, you're repeating yourself or something. Well, you have to be willing to repeat yourself.
Oh, you have to.
And ask the same question over and over and over. If they're dodging it.
Until you get an answer.
Right, if you get an answer, same. If you get asked the same question, give the same answer. Yeah. Even if the question is phrased differently, every time you get asked the same question, i.e., I don't know what a white person is, you're perfectly, because the question is being repeated, you can repeat the answer. There's actually a technique where, and it's nothing to do with what we're on about now, but it's actually in sales and it's probably in other things, where you keep asking why. And your brain tries to answer the same question differently. So the first time you get asked why, you'll give one response. Then if you get asked why again, you'll give a different response. And then the third time you get asked why to the same subject, you'll think of an even completely different response. And it's how you spot lying. But it's having the confidence in the message and the confidence about what you're about, which Adelheim demonstrated when the anti-white tried to ask the same question a second time. And instead of trying to answer it differently, which is what most people would have been tempted to try and do, he had the confidence to just give exactly the same answer to the same question.
Well, that's what I always get, like, people on Twitter, like, oh, you're repeating yourself. Well, I don't want to repeat myself, but you're acting like you didn't understand me the first time.
I just say repetition works.
Yeah, well, another way, just if you keep asking the same question, I'll give you the same answer.
Yeah.
Or if they keep refusing to answer a question, you keep asking it.
Yeah. And it's important. One of the first things that I spoke about when I did a podcast, I think Ken was around then. Certainly Adelheim was. I mean, Adelheim did a podcast, and I kept pointing out, and it's so true, and it's nothing that I thought of. I learned it from other walks of life. He who asks the questions controls the conversation. Go on the attack. Ask the questions.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Why is it? Why do anti-whites keep pushing white genocide? Ask the question. Why is it?
Yeah. Why is that something that I catch myself not doing sometimes?
Why does a workers' paradise have to shoot escapees?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exposing them. But, you know, Bob always talked about that, about being the interrogator. You know, we're the interrogators. We're the ones that have the moral high ground. We're the ones that are on the attack, and we're accusing them of a crime.
Yeah,
exactly. We're on the offense. They're on defense.
I'm old enough to remember the days of black crime stats on Stormfront and white IQ scores, black crime stats, and a few others. And you get some anti-white fresh out of college, they just post something like, why do you anti-whites think you're superior to everybody else? Sorry, why do you racists think you're superior to everybody else? And just sit back, and it'd be some of our best people would just spend hours in response Well, these are the FBI crime statistics, and these are this, and these are that. It's ridiculous.
You never accept Annie White's framing. That's what. That's why they are clever, and sometimes they come up with clever talking points, and sometimes you have to sit down and examine them and deconstruct them and figure out where they're lying or where they're being unfair to try to formulate a response to them.
It happens, but that's kind of rare in my experience, but it does happen.
Yeah, like every now and then they'll throw some mind-bending argument at you that's just like it just freezes your brain for a few seconds. It's so ridiculous, and you've got to try to sort of pull the fog away and remind yourself that it's all about the same thing: no more white people in white countries.
That's it. And I think, you know, a real standard response to even the most, you know, crazy argument that an anti-white could present is that nothing justifies white genocide.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's what I'll do sometimes. Like, well, okay, how does that justify genocide?
Yeah.
That's even better putting it as a question. How does that justify genocide? Or how does that justify white genocide?
Exactly.
And that shows the power of the white genocide meme. It's your trump card. It's what you can always fall back to. Whatever they throw at you. It always gives you the moral high ground.
Right, because if they end up having to justify it, any argument that they bring is in favor of genocide, you know, is in favor of a crime.
Right. I mean, how does that justify genocide? And half the times they'll say, well, I'm not trying to justify genocide. Okay, well, then what was your point? We were having a conversation about white genocide. You give me this long response. It looks like a long justification to me. If it's not, then you have no point.
Guys, I've just got to say I've got to go now because it's getting late here.
Sure.
But thanks for having me on. If we do this again, I'd like to talk about my idea for tribunals and punishments. But that's for another show. Okay. See you later. Bye now.
Later day. Yeah, thanks, Nelson.
Bye.
And that debate there we were talking about was Michael Prevost and Frederick, the concerned Scandinavian citizen.
Which
you can find on YouTube, actually. Michael Prevost debates Frederick, the concerned Scandinavian citizen.
Yeah, I go by Kevin in that debate.
Yeah, with regards to the justification, like it's, you know, once they, I think I was going to say there for, you know, the audience, it's for the audience, you know, you're really talking and debating an anti-white, and you're thinking about the audience that is watching your debate, and what you're saying is points to the audience. You know, you're not trying to win the debate. It's making your points and then leaving, you know. But if it gets to that point of justification, then they're openly out. I mean, you've ultimately won if they've come to the point where, you know, they become stupid and say, well, yeah, I want white genocide. Well, then they've, you know, they've openly admitted to a crime, and you know, there's nothing further to discuss, really. That they're openly admitting it.
Essentially, it always comes down to one of two things. Either they're denying white genocide or they're attempting to justify it. And really, anything that you might get caught up into comes down to those two questions. What are they doing? Are they denying it or are they trying to justify it? They're doing one or the other.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's some good points, you know, for people to watch out for.
Yeah, you're not trying to convince the anti-white, the committed anti-white, who might be paid, he might be, you know, his job might be to discredit you. Well, your job is to discredit him in the eyes of the audience watching. You're talking to the audience that's watching the debate. So
yeah, your job isn't to convert, it's to convict.
It's spreading the message, and that's why it is so effective. You know, the more that, you know, someone might come across the message online and they see it for the first time, and then they come across it again at a grocery store up on a board or something, and they're like, oh man, I just saw that, you know, and then it just keeps showing up and it becomes familiar to people, and they start researching and looking into it or curious about what it is. And that's the effect of, you know, a consistent message, the effectiveness of a consistent message.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It gets in your brain and you can't
get it. It does.
unhear it or unsee it.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's so true. Yep.
Well, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to see more of our work, please visit our website, fightwhitegenocide.com. That's fightwhitegenocide.com.